You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. Which episode is it, you might say? I'll tell you which episode it is. It's the latest episode, which is in the 600s, and that specific number is Punk News Podcast number 659. The Punk News Podcast 659. Emor, what's happening? What's going on? This is feature editor John Gentile. Emor, what's happening?
Hello. What is happening? My brain has melted. I have half of a brain cell. And I had a really funny thing I was going to say, and it decided to leave my head right before I opened my mouth. So
what was the general idea of what you're going to say?
Honestly, I'm not sure, because now I'm thinking about something completely different that has nothing to do with it at all. It's just like flick. Do you get that? Like when you get really hot and really tired, and it's just like you hold on to something for like 5 seconds, and then it's like, okay, we're on to the next thing, on to the next thing. It's just like you're flipping a book, like pages like a flip book.
My memory is very transient in some respects, in that like someone will say to me, my name is Steve. I'll be like, that's Steve. Remember that Steve. And then I'll look across the room, I'll look back, I'm like, I have no idea what this person's name is, you know? So I have that issue, yes. Or I'll say, oh, I need to do XYZ, and then I'll get distracted and forget that I need to do XYZ. So
Yeah. It's like that, but like times like a million. I don't know.
Well, there you go.
It's interesting.
So let's see, John. So it was, yes.
What about Summer Soiree?
So it was Summer Soiree 7 this summer in July. So Summer Soiree 7 was this past week. And, you know, I'm going to tell you like everything went down. But honestly, like, I'm going to be kind of brief because it was totally awesome. I don't know how I can keep topping myself or equaling myself. Somehow I did it again. But I got to say, like, nothing crazy happened. Like, it was a dream show. It was an amazing, awesome show. But, like, nothing crazy happened. Nothing bad happened, knock on wood. It was just a perfect dream all the way through. So here's the awesome but somewhat uneventful spiel. So last Summer Soiree was Summer Soiree 6, which, yet again, I was thinking it was going to be the last one, because last year was just mind-blowingly awesome. The Dwarves re-released all their records. They did a special set. Zorn played an amazing set. Dan Burke flew all the way out from Washington. The Mikey Erg Band was there. And who am I missing? Oh, Vixen 77 was there. And that show was just incredible. And people, like, left, like, totally blown away. So I wasn't even sure I was going to do one. Because, I don't want Summer Soiree not to be too, I don't know, too into myself, but I don't want Summer Soiree to be, you know, just another show. I want it to be special every year, almost like a festival, except for only 175 people, not like, you know, 50,000. Although I would do a 50,000 one. At any rate, so Summer Soiree, so in January, I emailed Joe. I said, hey, Joe, like I said, I wasn't even going to do a Summer Soiree, but then I realized it's the 50th anniversary of the Ramones. So I said, I'll ask Joe if he wants to do an all Ramones set, and he'll say no, because that's a lot of work. And then I can retire and say, well, I tried, and that's that. So I emailed Joe, and I said, hey, Joe, I got a crazy idea, man. It's going to be a lot of work. It's the 50th anniversary of the Ramones. And I knew that the Ramones is Joe's favorite band, or was Joe's favorite band, and still is one of his favorite bands. Like, the Ramones are one of his top bands. So I said, do you or Danjo Mar, which is Joe Jack Tackham, the solo band, do you want to do an all Ramones set? And I thought he's going to say no. And he got back to me, and he's like, we'll do it. And I was like, oh, great. but he said, but we won't sound anything like your traditional Ramones cover band. And so I said, okay, that's fine, because I'm not going to question Joe Jack. I'm not going to tell Joe Jack Tackham what to do. You know what I mean? And so I thought, well, he'll probably just do it like a folky style, or maybe kind of like a jangly style. And then, you know, that's fine. That's whatever. And it'll be cool. And then I booked the Ramones, because that just makes sense. The Ramones are four moms that play songs about being moms in the Ramones style. I knew that Mikey Erg was a big Ramones fan, and I knew that he did a set at the Ramones Museum once. And so I emailed, I said, hey, Mikey, do you and or the Mikey York Band want to do an all Ramones set? And what do you want your theme to be? And he said, well, I already did Leave Home in its entirety at the Ramones Museum like 10 years ago. How about the Mikey York Band do all of Leave Home? And I'm like, that's freaking awesome. And then I booked another band who I'm not going to name in February, mind you. and I said, well, what do you guys want to do? It's a lot of work. But if you want to play the show in 6 months, then you can do it. And they're like, we want to do all songs that are the Ramones covered, which was a great idea. So I said, that's awesome. So I soft announced the show in February. And tickets, I've yet to decipher a pattern. At almost every show I've had, the ticket selling pattern has been different, although there's about five or six different, I guess, patterns they follow or whatever, but it's always kind of different. This show was interesting in that every week I sold like three tickets or four tickets or two tickets. And like, I never sold like 30 tickets in a week, and I never sold zero tickets in a week. From February to July, even up to the day of the show, I sold three tickets, two tickets, four tickets. And because I booked the show so far out, like if you book a show like 6 months, 6 weeks in advance, and you're not halfway sold out in like a week or two, you're like kind of freaking out, you know? But I never freaked out because every week I'm selling three tickets. So by April, I'm already like half sold out or something. You know what I mean? So I'm like, yeah, it's fine, you know? So we did the main announcement about 6 weeks out before the show. So I had already announced Joe and Mikey Erg solo and the Ramones. No, I'm sorry. I'd announced Joe and Mikey Erg solo. And then the June announcement was going to be it's Mikey Erg the band, so it's even cooler, the Ramones and this other band. And the night before I emailed everybody, I'm like, all right, everybody, it's going down. So get ready. It's going to be cool. And then 42 minutes before I announced the thing, 42 minutes, the one band was like, hey, we're really sorry, John, but we're really busy, and we don't think we're gonna be able to sound good enough. And we've got a family commitment. Turned out that family commitment was going to see the Linda Lindas in Asbury Park. and so we can't do the show, but we'd love to play another show. And I'm thinking, you are never ever playing any show I'm ever putting on ever again, because it'd be one thing. I didn't say that. I was actually kind of cool about it. I'm like, well, I'm disappointed, but you've made your decision. And I was freaking furious. And the reason I was furious is because, A, they told me 6 weeks out, not 4 months out when I could have got another band to learn a Ramones set, you know, 6 weeks. Just enough time where I can't get another band to learn an entire set for my thing. You know what I mean? And you know, so I'm like pretty – oh, and also they were playing three other gigs that month that they booked after my gig. You know what I mean? And so really like – what that said to me, it's like, well, we can fuck over John because John's a nice guy and he won't get mad at us. Where if we screw over these other people, they'll be mad at us and we'll feel the repercussions. So we'll screw over the nice guy because he's nice and he won't be too mean to us, you know? And right. So I was furious. I really was furious. But you know, it's like the band is pretty young. And so I'm like, you know, it's not a good look for you to really be like beaten up like a really young band, you know, although they're not babies, you know what I mean? They're old enough to commit to what they agreed to. And so I said, well, I'm disappointed, but you've made your choice. Right. And I didn't say anything else. And then, you know how you usually get like less angry as time goes on, like,
right.
Like in a conflict, you're like angry. And then like a couple days later, you're less angry. You know, I was getting angrier because I was thinking about like, wait, they've got three other shows this week, this month, you know? Like, I was getting angrier and angrier. I'm like, why didn't I tell them off? And they're like, now it'll be weird if I tell them off. And I'm like, so pissed off, you know what I mean? So
yes.
I reached out to Vixen 77. I said, hey, because, you know, I mean, I love Vixen 77 and plus Vixen 77. Like, they're down to rock. They're down to kick ass or whatever, you know?
Yes.
And I said, cool, maybe cool. You guys can, you know, I'm like, I got screwed over. Maybe you guys can learn like one, two, or three Ramones songs and do your other set. You know what I mean? And that way, you know, because I've got Joe Jack Talcum, the band, doing all Ramones. That's good enough as it is. I got Mikey Erg, the band, doing all Ramones and the Ramones. So no one's really going to care that one band isn't playing all Ramones. You know what I mean? Like, who's going to give a shit? So Vixen 77 was like, we broke up, but three of us are now in Pink Soap. And we only have one song. And I'm like, well, it's punk rock. Do you want to learn a Ramon song and just do your other song? And that'll be your set. And they're like, it'll only be like 9 minutes. I'm like, listen, it's punk rock. I mean, I've seen legit punk gigs where like the set was 8 minutes long. I'll never forget when I saw Siall, that cool band, not from the Philippines, from Malaysia.
Oh,
There's a very
yeah.
cool hardcore band called Siall from Malaysia. They came all the way to Philadelphia and did an 8 minute set, which was awesome. But I'm thinking, man, imagine flying like 16 hours to do an 8 minute set. It was a cool. So I'm like, listen, it's punk rock. Just come and do whatever you want, and it'll be rad. And they say, okay. And so that was that. So that was cool, man. I love Vixen 77. I love Pink. So Caitlin, Sarah, and Liz—they're all super cool. And so, and I kept selling two or three tickets. About a week before, and I sold about two or three tickets a day. And like nothing aside from the other band dropping out. Nothing really crazy happened. I emailed everybody. I'm like, "Do you guys want to share a back line?" And everyone's like, "Yes, we want to share a back line." And everyone was willing to bring up peace and like no one argued about it. And then I know a week before I emailed everybody. I'm like, "Well, is everyone ready?" And everyone's like, "We're ready." And I just kept selling tickets, which was cool. And so, literally the day of the show, I sold out the last ticket, which was super cool. So it was a sold out show, which is rad.
Nice.
And so, Em, I've never been so relaxed before a gig ever. As I've said before, the funnest part of a gig is planning the gig and then announcing it. And then after that, between then and the gig, it's hell. It's brutal. It's stressful. It sucks. But I was so relaxed, and I'm like, oh man, I hope I'm not like too relaxed. Like, I hope I'm not like sabotaging. Like, I'm like, am I for, I have a checklist of stuff I bring to the gig. The goodie bags, the money for the bands, the water, the schedule. Like I've set a list of everything I bring, and I'm like, and
Yes.
I loaded everything up, and I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't feel like I'm forgetting anything. Like what am I forgetting? Like I'm so relaxed. I'm like, this can't be right. I'm so relaxed. I
Yeah.
even I always do intros, and I got my custom intro put together, and my custom intro came together way easier than they ever has before. And I only practiced it like
Ooh.
three times. Sometimes I practice it like 50 times. I practice it like three times. I'm like, well, I'm good to go. I don't know, man. It's way too easy,
It's
and
just
so
flowing.
it is. And part of it is because all, and this is something bands should really think about. A huge part of a band getting booked, at least at the local level, is that are you easy to work with? And will you not be a pain in the ass? And will you solve problems and not create problems? And it just goes. Joe Jack Talcum and the band. I mean, he is a literal punk icon. Joe is as important to punk rock as it gets, or if not as it gets, one level down. Maybe not as
Yes.
important as the Clash. I would say Dead Milk Went On, but maybe not as important as the Clash or Crass or Ramones. So one level down, right? So, but he, I mean, he's a
Yeah.
legitimate punk rock star. Joe is so easy to deal with. Joe, the band said, we'll bring the drums, which is always the biggest pain in the ass. You know what I mean? So like they
Yes.
volunteered it. And it's like it's a tr like and then you'll deal with like this Flavor of the Month band, and they're like, oh, well, we need, a bass cabinet, but it's gotta be a PV cabinet, and it's gotta be black, and it's gotta have this frequent, 38 hertz, not 42 hertz, and it's gotta, it's like Buzz Osborne, Joe Jack Talcum, the Dwarves, the Mikey Erg band, they don't give a shit. They just show up and you give them
Yeah.
gear, they're going to wreck the place. You know what I mean? Like actually, Em, if you recall, a couple summer soirees ago, I was furious at the opening band that needed a specific drum kit. You,
Yes,
like, you,
yes.
like, oh my God. Like, none of the bands this time, like, are there going to be drums there? I'm like, Joe's bringing them. They're like, fine. And like, it was, so anyways, everybody showed up on time. The Joe Jack Talcum, the band, they were set sound checking, and they sounded freaking awesome. I'm like, wow, this, I knew they were going to be good, but I wasn't exactly sure how good they were going to be. And so they, I'm like, wow, they sound like really good. And so, like, even though we only had like 2 hours of line check and everything, actually, this is hilarious. The Mikey Erg band gets down there, and not only had they never practiced the Ramones Leave Home at all,
Oh my God.
this iteration of the, and this is why I was confused, is I thought the Mikey Erg band was always three guys, same three guys, but it's not, or maybe it is now, but it wasn't before. Now the Mikey Erg band is Mikey Erg, Jeff of the Ergs, and Joe DiCarolis. And so they all, Mikey Erg comes from Brooklyn, Jeff comes from Philly. Joe comes from somewhere in like Central Jersey or whatever. And they had literally never practiced Ramon's Leave Home together ever. They had never practiced together, and they had never played together. This was literally the first time they'd all ever played together. You know what I mean? Yeah. And not only that, is Mikey actually hadn't learned Leave Home at all before the gig. You know
what?
So, but you know, Mikey does hundreds of gigs a year.
Yeah,
Mikey is the ultimate pro. I mean, he really is. You know, Mikey is amazing. And he's like, "Well, time to learn Leave Home." And this is literally like 45 minutes before the gig, and I see he's got like an iPad or a tablet or whatever. And he's plugging it in, and he's watching Ramon's videos, and he's playing along to Ramon's videos, learning it 45 minutes before the gig.
Oh my gosh.
I say to the other guys, I'm like, you guys are going to soundcheck or anything? They're like, not really. And they never even played together ever. People are going to think I'm making this up, but I'm totally not, you know? There are moms, I'm like, well, do you guys want to soundcheck? And they're like, not really. Well, no, they're like, we do, but like two of the four of them were like out getting food. So Vixen, not Vixen, said Pink Soap wanted to sound check, and they sounded good. And so, I mean, and honestly, like, I actually wasn't even that worried about any of that because, like, you know, it's a wacky once in a lifetime gig, in that, like, it's bands playing their own. It's not like it's World Inferno or like Dwarves, like, doing their own thing, and people would care if it sucked. Like, if it sucks, who gives a shit? It's Ramones and it's fun. You know, like, who gives a shit if it sucks? It's going to be fun. You know what I mean?
Of course.
And so, and I always love when this happens. So before Doors, so between bands, I made custom mixes, which I always do. Before the show, I had all music from 77 to 79 era CBGBs, Talking Heads, Dead Boys, Patti Smith, all that kind of stuff, like playing across the speakers, which was kind of cool. I don't know if anyone actually got that connection, but whatever. So before the gig, the line down the block was super long. And it's always so much fun to see that. You know what I mean? Like, you open up the door and there's just tons of people there, and they're all there to have fun. So I'm doing what I always do, is I'm walking down the line. I'm giving people glow bracelets I had mini etcher sketches that I was handing out, that kind of stuff. And people always love that. Except there's always a couple people that are like, they're like, what's that? I'm like, it's a glow bracelet. They're like, what's it for? I'm like, it's for fun, you know. And they're like, I don't want one. And I'm like, all right. And like, I had about a group of four that they were angry that I was handing out glow bracelets. But most people love the glow bracelets. The glow bracelets are a big hit. Sadly, I had some glow bracelets that are a couple of years old, and they did not work. So my old glow bracelets were basically duds. Anyways,
oh no.
So people come in, and the venue, I mean, it's sold out. The venue is packed, but not too packed. And then, you know, it was showtime. And so I had a pretty cool intro this time. So I go up on stage. No, I don't go up on stage. You might be too young for this, but do you know when the Ramones were on The Simpsons and they played Mr. Burns' Birthday Party?
I have seen that clip, yes.
Okay, so I had that clip play, you know, and then – and then when CJ goes, go to hell, you old bastard. And they were singing Happy Birthday, which was the Ramones' 50th anniversary. And then CJ was like, go to hell, you old bastard. And then I had Explosions. Then I had an instrumental version of, not Sheena's a Punk Rocker. It might have been Rockaway Beach. And then I wrote up, I'm like, Philadelphia, make some noise. Wah, Philadelphia, make some noise. Wah. Then there was Explosion. Then it goes into an instrumental version of Pinhead. I'm like, Philadelphia, I want you to sing with me. Gabba Gabba, we accept you. We accept you. One of us. And people started singing away the whole place. Like, there's always that fear that, like people are very much herd-minded. And so if I get up there and I'm like, everyone sing, and, like, the cool people in front don't sing or whatever, then I'm up there all alone. You know what I mean? But, like, everyone was going, Gabba Gabba, we accept you. So that was real cool. Then there was Explosions again. And then it was Sheena's a Punk Rocker. So I'm like, sing with me. Sheena is a punk rocker. Except for I can't sing the final, you know, Sheena is a punk rocker. Sheena is a punk rocker. Sheena is a punk rocker. Now. I can't do the now. I'm like, I'm a horrible singer. And so luckily the crowd was very able to do that, you know. Then there was Explosions.
Hell
then
yeah.
Then we did, I'm trying to think, Shock Treatment. Give me Shock Treatment. So a room of about 200 people, everyone singing, give me Shock Treatment, give me Shock Treatment. So there's Explosions again. Then I said, Philadelphia, it's Summer Soiree 7, Ramones Mania. And people are like freaking out. It was pretty rad. Then I thanked the sponsors. Actually, let's thank them one last time right now, because they paid, you know, some cool money to make this thing happen, which I appreciate. So our sponsors for the evening were Heavy Metal Hair Salon, Sit and Spin Records, Revilla Grooves Records, Jupiter Records, Rock and Roll Night Fight Records in Lansdowne, PA. Let's see who else. Vinyl Revival, Angry Young and Poor out in Lancaster, Prison Record Exchange, Rainbow Records, all the records, and Siren Records. So thanks again to all those sponsors. And then, so we were back, then there were explosions again. And so then I held up a Hey Ho, Let's Go sign. So I'm like, hey, and it broke down to Hey Ho, Let's Go, the instrumental. I'm like, Philadelphia, I need you all to sing with me. Hey Ho, Let's Go. And people were like really freaking out. We get to the end, Hey Ho, Let's Go. There's a bunch of explosions. Then Pink Soap was already on stage, jumped into their song. They covered the Ramones, and the Ramones song that they covered was, give me a sec here. Sorry, let's see here. I'm pulling it up right now. I should have had this ready. It was cool. They sounded real good, and they did a cool choice, and they covered one that's slightly more obscure, but not a super obscure one. So let's see here. They covered the following song.
Yes.
The song that they covered was a song from the 80s era Ramones.
Okay.
And that song was the following song.
That they covered.
That song was I Can't Give You Anything. Great song. So they did I Can't, and honestly, like, I mean, they've been playing for a few years now as Vixen 77, but now it's Pink. So they sounded friggin' awesome. Then they did an original. Then their closer was not Fiona Apple. You Ought to Know. Who is that?
Liz Alanis Fair? Morissette.
Alanis Morissette. They, you know, they did a punk version of You Ought to Know by Alanis Morissette.
Oh, nice.
And it was awesome. And then, like the crowd actually was way into it, and people were like cheering. They're like, "Well, we don't have any more songs." And someone said, "Do the Ramones song again." And they're like, "All right." And so they did the Ramones song again, which was totally awesome. But that was doubly awesome because it reminded me of Off and Black Flag, because when Black Flag was Keith Morris era, they only had 16 songs. And so when they were done the set and people would demand more songs, they would just play the first four songs again. And then when I saw Off, they did that same shtick, as they did the first 16 songs, and then they said 924 Kilman, and then Keith Moore's like, when I was in Black Flag, we would just do the first four songs again. So that's what we're going to do now is Off. They just did the first four Off songs again. And so I thought it was cool they played the same song twice, which was totally rad. Also, I forgot to mention, I made special backdrops for all the bands. The Pink Soap backdrop was a version of Too Tough to Die with the Ramones removed, so it's just like a blue light, and it was Pink Soap standing in front of the blue light. So they were awesome. I'm super excited for their true debut set, which is not till November, but they sounded awesome, and the crowd was way into it, which was awesome. After that, it was the Ramones, and the Ramones were their background was Too Tough to Die, the subway. But I took the subway car and I removed the Ramones, so it looked like it was their mom standing in front of the subway car. They were awesome. They did a bunch of parodies and some. I forgot that they do some originals, and I'm like, oh man, because I actually had the Daniel Marr set list, and so I'm like, oh man, they're playing some of the same songs. Not that I cared about that at all. I figured, like, even if all the bands play the same song, who gives a shit? It's Ramones Mania. But I think Daniel Marr was a little, what's the word I'm looking for? A little cautious about that. And I wish I maybe thought that through a little bit better before the show, you know. But their moms were awesome. During Beat on the Brat, I threw a bunch of pool noodles into the crowd. So people were like whacking each other, you know, Beat on the Brat. And during Pinhead, I gave them the sign that says Gabba Gabba Hey, you know. And so they were awesome. And between Pink Soap and Ramones, it was all girl group music because, you know, Joey Ramone loved girl group, you know, like the Shirelles and the Crystals and Ronettes and that kind of stuff, which people were way into. And so then between Pink Soap and the Mikey Erg band, I played a bunch of Dee Dee Ramone tracks, you know, his rap tracks, which was great. And I don't think people knew what that was, honestly, but like, honestly, on the big system, it wasn't that bad. I'm like, you know, Dee Dee Ramone's solo stuff is kind of rad, man. I mean, I've always kind of liked the solo album, but like on the big sound system with the 808s kicking, it sounded pretty good. So anyway, the Mikey Erick Band came out, and they were super awesome. They just tore through Leave Home. What was kind of neat. Oh, and all, like I said, is they didn't even they had never practiced together, and you would have thought they had been practicing together for years. I could not believe how tight they sounded, how together they sounded. Plus, they played the songs at super speed. Mikey kind of sang with a Joey affectation, you know, and they just did
Nice.
all of Leave Home. During California Sun, I threw a bunch of sun balloons onto the crowd. And then again, during Creedon, I gave them the Gabba Gabba Hey signs. And then they what was kind of cool is they did all the tracks from the USA and the UK version. So they closed with Babysitter, which was kind of cool because that's not on the UK version, I think, but it is on the USA version. Whichever
Yeah.
version had Carbone Not Glue cut out on it has Babysitter, I think, and they did both. And they I mean, they sounded absolutely amazing. Like they sounded so together, so rad, and so awesome. And it was just, and people were way into it, obviously. It sounded like it was like the best way to do a whole album of the Ramones. They slammed through. I mean, Leave Home is basically hit after hit. Oh, and the backdrop was the Leave Home album cover, but with the Ramones removed. So again, it was like the Mikey Erick Band on the rooftop. And so it was just totally rad. After that, it was people were having like a blast. I'm trying to remember what I was going to do, brass versions of Ramones songs before the Joe Jack Talcum Band, which is Daniel Moore. But I thought, no, that might annoy some people if I do, or might annoy Daniel Moore if I played the Ramones before the same songs they're going to play.
Right.
So instead, I'm trying, what was the mix I made? Damn it. Well, I remember I agonized. Oh, I did obscure Ramone solo tracks. So I did like On the Beach, Joey Ramone and his brother. I did Joey Ramone and Debbie Harry doing a Commotion in the Ocean or something like that. I did a DD a solo track. And so just like, oh, I also did a Joey Ramone doing Duke of Earl, which I thought was kind of cool. Like I've never even heard that before till I found it, you know? And so it was cool to have the Ramones, but not singing Ramones, because that would it'd be weird to play Blitzkrieg Bop before Joe the band as Blitzkrieg Bop, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, the Joe Jack Talcum Band came out, and let me tell you know,
Yes.
Joe was like, we're not gonna sound like a Ramones cover band, and you know, I said, oh well, you know, they'll do jangly or folky or something. Joe and Dan and Marshall friggin' rule. First of all, I mean, and how much work is it to learn 17 Ramones songs for one gig where they're getting paid, but they're not getting
Yeah.
paid dead milkman money? Oh, I should mention, a week before
Yes.
my dopey gig, the Dead Milkmen were playing a large festival in Asbury Park, and 4 weeks before that, they were playing the biggest punk festival ever, I guess. No Values in
Oh,
California, right?
yes.
So they
Yes,
were playing
yes.
80,000 people, 10, 15, 20,000 people, and then my dopey gig. You know what I mean? And not only that, is that they had to do more work to learn a full set, you know?
Right.
And they came out. They opened with Durango 95, the instrumental from later era Ramones, which was so cool because it's like later day Ramones did open with Durango 95. And so it was really cool in that like they found a way to do classic Ramones, but not just be cliche Ramones cover. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
they found nuances, you know, but they didn't just do all oddities either. So they opened with Durango 95, the instrumental, and they snapped right into Blitzkrieg Pop. And I, you know, I handed out signs and said, "Hey ho, let's go." And
Nice.
from there, they just did a bunch of hits. I have the and I'm gonna go grab the set list and read it real quick. So I'm gonna put this on
Okay.
mute, and I want you to talk to the audience for about 30 seconds while I grab the set list about how much you wish you could have been there. Starting now.
I wish I could have been at the summer swar Ramones Mania, because it sounds really cool, and I haven't been able to go to a punk news show, and it's just like, I don't know. It sounds so fun. They always sound so fun, and like all the crowd participation and all the bands are super into it, and it just seems like a really good vibe, you know? And there's also like goodie bags, which is pretty rad. So hopefully next time, hopefully John will do a next one and it'll be really neat. And yeah, it won't be another Ramones cover one though. Like that's a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Indeed it is, and I'm back. And so M, here's the
Yes.
set list was insane. Durango 95 into Blitzkrieg Bop, into Do You Remember Rock and Roll Radio, into I Want to Be Sedated, into Beat on the Brat, and I threw more pool noodles on the audience, into Teenage Lobotomy, into Sheena's a Punk Rocker, into Rockaway Beach, to Deep Cut M, and probably the best 80s Ramone track, Strength to Endure, into Danny Says, into KKK Took My Baby Away, into Havana Affair, not a deep cut, but I wouldn't expect it. It was awesome. Into We're Happy Family, into 53rd and 3rd, into another deep cut, Poison Heart, into Cretin Hop, into their closer, another deep cut from the last album, Got a Lot to Say. Then M, people like were cheering, and they won't let them get off stage. So they came back out. Well, actually, they didn't leave, but they did Do You Want to Dance? And during Do You Want to Dance, I threw up like probably 300 balloons on the audience and a few more pool noodles. And there's balloons bouncing all around. People are whacking each other with noodles. And like it was amazing. And so anyway, to the actual playing, Joe's like, we're not gonna sound like the Ramones. And Joe, I love Joe. I adore Joe. I think Joe is an 127 out of 10 on the punk scale.
Yes.
The guy is confounding him because they sounded exactly like the remote. Like it was like a dream, Em. It was like the best cover Joe and the boys do Ramones you could ever imagine. Full on high power electric, not folky, not jangly, slamming Ramones. But it was kind of like the best perspectives of all the eras of the Ramones, in that it was like the speed and power of like rock at the Russia era. So a lot of speed and power,
Oh,
but still a lot of
nice.
melody. It had the melody though of like original Ramones, but also like it kind of had like that dark tension of 80s era Ramones. And so like it was absolutely amazing, Em. And I think what I like the best is Joe did the Ramones not as Joey Ramone, but as Joe Jack Talcum, if that makes any sense. So like when he was
I think
singing,
so.
he didn't like try to sound like Joey Ramone, he sounded like Joe Jack Talcum singing the Ramones, and but like forcefully, you know what I mean? And
Yes.
it sounded so insanely good, Em. It sounded so good, like I'm like, oh my God, this is like 30 times. I mean, I knew it was going to be good because it was 30 times better than I thought it was going to be. Like it was so amazing, Em. Like it was just perfect, and it blew my mind. And they put in
Yeah.
all this work, 17 or 18 songs, weeks of practice for this one special little gig. And like it really goes to show Joe and Dan and Marshall and also the other dead milkmen, they are as punk as it gets, Em. Like they don't need to do that, Em. You know what I mean? Like they're playing festivals.
Yeah.
Literally, they're playing festivals. You know what I mean? If the dead
For
milkmen do a
sure.
Philly show, there's 2,000, 3,000 people there, right? They don't need to do
Yes.
extra work for a 200 person gig at $14 a ticket. You know what I mean? Like you can do the
Yeah.
math on what people are getting paid. You know what I mean? And so, not that I mean, I didn't get paid anything really, but like, not that someone hoarded the money. It's just that there's not a lot of money go around. I mean, there was some, but not, and so it just goes to show that like, people like worship bad religion, or people worship NOFX or whoever. You know what I mean? Like, are they doing 175, 200 person gigs where they do more work for fun and for the artistic statement? Not really. You know what I mean? Not really. And it
Right.
just goes to show that like how friggin' awesome the Dead Milkmen and Dan Gilmore and all the spin-off bands and Heinrich and Seventh Victim, I think like Midnight, like they are as punk as it gets, Em. Like it was so awesome that like they don't need to do this. They're doing this because they want to do it. You know what I mean? It was
Yeah.
so, and now you want to do it like they really want to make it good, and it was just absolutely amazing. Like I really, really, really couldn't believe how good it sounded. And before the gig, I'm like, well, I'll never top World Inferno the first year. I'll never top the Dwarves, And I don't know if I topped it, but I definitely tied it. And like, it really was a special, once in a lifetime, one time only thing that I count myself extremely lucky that I got to see. You know what I mean? Like it was awesome. It
Yeah.
was really, really awesome. And then after the gig was over, I handed out goodie bags. I had some board games left over that I handed out to people. And people were like, what's this? I'm like, it's a board game. You know, get out of here. And then people left with huge smiles on their faces. No drama. Nothing crazy happened to them. And
nice.
You know, after the dwarf show, there was a ton of, as I said, there was literally after the dwarf show, there was probably about 4 inches of trash on the ground. Like, I was taking a snow shovel to sweep up, to get up the trash, which I didn't mind at the dwarf show because I thought that was funny and cool and kind of sure the people had a blast, you know. Now, yes. If people had fist fought or were angry at the dwarf show, I would have been mad about it. But because of the dwarf show, everyone had so much fun. Like, I didn't mind that I had to clean up literally, like, 30 trash bags of trash. And you're like, how can the people generate this much trash, you know? but weirdly, at the Joe Jack Tatum show, there was some trash, but there's probably like 1/50th the amount of trash, you know? And I'm like,
oh wow.
I'm like, that's weird. I get, is it the audience or why was there so much less trash, you know? But also, I guess what was kind of cool is after the show was over, some people stole my "Hey Ho, Let's Go" and "Gabba Gabba Hey" signs, which I thought was kind of awesome. Like, I mean, it's just a piece of cardboard that some guy wrote "Gabba Gabba Hey" on. But people had such a good time that they wanted that as like a memento or an artifact or something. You know what I mean? Like, I thought that was pretty cool that someone wanted that. Also, outside the gig, I had taped up some posters just so people knew that was the gig. It was there because it can be hard to, like, the venue is a place called Philomoka, which used to be a mausoleum showcase room in the 1900s, early 1900s. So oh, wow. It doesn't really look like a venue. There's not like a big marquee out front, so it's hard for people to find it sometimes. So I put some flyers out front. People stole the flyer. Well, stole is the wrong word. People took the flyers off the front of the building, which I was thrilled about because when I go to a gig, like, I'll take the flyer off the bill. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was so cool that people had such a good time and such a great memory that they wanted a piece of it. You know what I mean? And so, it was awesome, man. Like, I don't – there's no drama. That nothing wacky or weird happened. The only thing wacky or weird that happened was friggin' Dan Jomar and the Mikey Yerk Band were astoundingly good, astoundingly good. And it was awesome. It was awesome.
That's so good. I'm glad it went well.
The question then is, should I do a summer soiree 8 or not?
Yes.
Usually at the end of summer soiree, I'm like, that's it. I'm not doing it again. You know, this year, I don't necessarily feel that way. I feel like I kind of do want to do it again. But that being said, maybe that means I won't be doing one next year, you know? So we'll see. We'll see.
See how the vibes go.
But it was awesome, man. It was freaking awesome. It was awesome.
That's so good. That's so good to hear. Everyone's into it.
It was awesome, man. It was freaking rad. So yeah,
can't go wrong with the Ramones.
So to cap that off, another event at Philomoka, September 29 and 30. There's going to be an event at Philomoka in Philadelphia. It's called Go Nightclubbing, and it's two women named Pat Ivers and Emily Armstrong, and they filmed the largest collection of live punk shows in New York during that era. They had literally the biggest archive in the world of New York live punk shows. And from that archives, they've made basically four shows. Greatest Hits, New Wave, and then also Punk, and then No Wave. And so it's going to be two nights, September 29 and 30 in Philadelphia. And they're going to show a bunch, two episodes a night. And I am going to be emceeing and hosting night two at Philomoka, and we're going to be showing like live footage of Dead Kennedys, Iggy Pop, Dead Boys, Go-Go's, Bad Brains, John Cale, and a ton more. And it's going to be rad. So that's kind of not necessarily related to Summer Soiree 7, but I don't know, kind of following in the wake of, if you will.
Another cool event everyone should go to.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool. So I don't know. So that's what's happening. I actually almost talked for almost an hour. I thought it was gonna be shorter than that. let's hit a little bit of news, Em. Anything you want to mention off the news, or do you want to jump into it?
Sorry, you kind of broke up there at the end. What did you say?
Is there any news that you want to mention specifically, or do you want me to jump into the news?
I'll do mine super fast. Well, it doesn't have to be fast, but. Maddie Grace has released a new solo song. Again, you might know her from Cluttered, Future Girls, Century Egg, Weekend Dads, any other, like pretty much any Canadian punk band. Maddie's great. You should go listen to her. But she has a new single out called I May Be a Bad Influence, But At Least I'm Not a Fascist Cuck, which is one of the best song titles of the year. And the song's very good. It's a little more kicky. Like there's more electric vibes to it. It's very good. Everyone should listen to it. That is my two cents. John, did you
Well,
check out the song?
actually had another chance to check it out. I've been so busy wrapping up things from Summer Soiree 8-7,
Yeah.
so I've been super busy. But like my marathon summer is coming to an end, and like my busyness, so I should have a little bit more free time going forward. And what should I do for Summer
Hey.
Soiree 8? What do you think I should do for Summer Soiree 8? What do you think I should do?
Ooh.
I'm trying to put together a New Year's Eve show right now, actually.
Ooh, that would be fun. Who are you thinking for that? Or are you thinking kind of more
I
like
don't want to.
a DJ kind of disco ball kind of vibe?
Nah, sucks. I mean, honestly, it doesn't really suck, but I mean, no, definitely going to be bands. Like I said, like the challenge is it's got to be a cool band that has a draw. Because like you definitely don't want New Year's Eve to be underwhelming. So if I have four like cool bands that are fine but not special, it'll be underwhelming. So I reached out to one band. They said they couldn't do it. There's another band from New York City I'm going to reach out to. I have a feeling they're not going to say yes. I think they're going to say no, but we'll see. What I do want to do is at New Year's Eve, not at New Year's exactly, I want to drop a giant New Year's ball, but have it be like a big skull or something, you know?
That would be cool.
So, Em, what should I do for Summer Soiree 8, Em? What should I do?
For Summer Soiree 8, you should have
Or,
eight bands.
that's not a bad idea. For Summer Soiree 5, I had five bands. No, that's
Yeah.
not true. I had four. For Summer Soiree 6, I had five bands. So,
See, now eight is the number.
but one thing is, as you remember, I said is I got madder at that band as time went on.
Yes.
I am now less mad because it was awesome despite without them. So I'm no longer as furious as I am. They've just got the permanent XM. You know what I mean? And that's that.
Yeah.
So, on an unrelated note, I just saw this pop up right now. If you live in Texas, Misfit tickets are down to $39 Saturday, August
Oh,
10 in Texas.
that is
So,
cheap.
yeah, I mean, especially for something like that. I guess the Misfits Rampage is kind of cooling off a little bit now that everyone's had like, multiple chances to see them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They
I
haven't
wonder.
played any Canadian shows, though.
Probably a
So,
visa. Honestly, it's probably a visa issue in that
probably.
like. And that can be, I know that can be a challenge for American bands playing Canada. Like the Misfits will probably have to pay a lot to play Canada. So their perspective would be like, well, why bother? We'll just do another USA show, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But I wonder how that works. Like this is like, it's at what's called the Moody Center, which I know that's like at least 10,000 or something. So if they're slashing print tickets down to 39, like if they're lowering the price of tickets, and that's never a good sign. You know what I mean? So, and the
Right.
promoter appears to be an independent promoter, a guy called Bobby D, not Clear Channel or whoever. So I'm like, I wonder if
Right.
he's just taking like is he taking like several hundred, a 700, several hundred thousand dollar bath? Like, how much money is he losing, you know? Or does he have like
Could be,
insurance
yeah.
against that? I wonder, you know? I really don't know how promotion works at that scale, at least at the independent level, you know?
I think there'd have to be some level of insurance, wouldn't there? Because like otherwise, like you'd just kind of be fucked all the time.
I mean, you could like, lose your house and more, you know.
Yeah, like that's really scary.
The lineup is the Misfits, Suicidal Tendencies, Revenant Horton Heat, and Agnostic Front. And
Oh.
I guess they can't get enough people to go, man. That's kind of weird, isn't it? And it's weird that
Yeah.
Agnostic Front is billed under Revenant Horton Heat.
That is an odd choice for sure. But yeah, no, like especially in like Texas, like that's, I don't know, I just, it seems like it would be more of a draw.
I feel like they missed a marketing opportunity here. They should have said called the show Texas is the reason, of course. And they didn't. They totally missed it, Em.
What did they call
Anyways,
it?
the original Misfits play Texas.
Oh, that's That's silly. Okay.
Speaking of controversial things, the Bad Brains have reissued Eye Against Eye. The new version is out in Org Music and follows years of dispute with SST Records because SST Records doesn't pay anybody. It's remastered, doesn't have any bonus tracks, but it looks nice and sounds nice. You know, for the, about 15 years ago, the thing with the Bad Brains, people were like, Eye Against Eye is the Bad Brains' best album. It's their London Calling. And then people kind of forgot about it, and now people are back to saying, yeah, Eye Against Eye is great and mind-blowing. I always thought it was kind of boring, like all the mid-tempo songs. I always thought, like, Eye Against Eye is not a terrible album, but it's the end of the Bad Brains, if you will. Now, like, people love that record. I just think it's, like, kind of too slow and mid-tempo, and the production's not that good. What do you feel about Eye Against Eye, Em? The title's cool.
The title's cool. I don't... You know, we've talked about this before with band names, how it's like you hear a band name and you assume that you think you or you think you know what they're going to sound like because of the name, and then you check them out and it's like the complete opposite or whatever. That's kind of what I got from the title of the album, because with the title of the album, I thought that it was going to sound different than what it actually did. So there is kind of that disconnect there. Again, I don't think it's bad. I wouldn't say it's like my favorite by any or I wouldn't say it's my favorite by them, but it's not bad overall. I'm glad they are re-releasing it though. Like, that's
well, there
pretty
you go.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, it is a extraordinary. That does have some all right songs. I just never felt like, I always felt it was just kind of boring. And people, it's great. It's like, I don't know, man. Are you saying it's great because it's the Bad Brains, or you actually think it's great? You know, like you know, the first record is mind blowing, amazing. You know,
oh yeah, the first
I guess
record
I is just
amazing.
Too mid tempo for me.
So, well, like,
and also there's three. I always think it's hilarious that there's basically three versions of the first record: Black Dot, the real first record, and then Rock for Light. It's like the three same album recorded three times, pretty much. You know,
but it's punk.
That's
punk
true.
To have all
I think
of the
also
different
it's. Vicious Dreams, them, have released a new single.
Oh, yeah.
Off their upcoming album. It's off their second album. It's called Turn Off My Brain. And the new single is called Too Tough. What do you think of Vicious Dreams, them?
I like Vicious Dreams. They're really cool. Yeah, because you wrote about them for one of the Cool New Bands things we did a while ago.
Which is going
and...
up next weekend.
Pardon?
Cool New Bands 2024 is going up next week. Cool
Hell
New
yeah.
Bands 2024 is going up next week. There you go. So.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. But yeah, no, like, that's how I found out about them. And I was like, that they're really good. I hope they're not just like we just release like one or two things and we're done. So I'm glad that new stuff's on the way. And I really like the new song Too Tough. Looking forward to hearing more. And I like Turn
Yeah,
Off
it's
My
real.
Brain, the title of the record.
It's real good. If you haven't checked out their first album, you definitely should. I think it's just called Vicious Dreams, I think. It's got like a skeleton holding a guy's open while he watches eyes guys. It's got a skeleton holding a guy's eyes open while he watches TV. And it's like super good. Actually kind of reminds me of Sloppy Seconds a little bit. M Fucked Up is back to the wackiness.
Yeah.
I saw Fucked Up twice. This past month, I saw them in Philadelphia, and then I saw them in New York opening for Off, and they did not a totally different set list, but a very different set list, which I was surprised. I would think that Fucked Up would do basically the same set list every show, which I am not against. I used to think it was cool when bands, like, I remember there's a tour rant, like, we're doing a totally different set list every show, and they just did the same songs in a different order, you know? But
that's
you know,
funny.
I mean, Buzz Osborne and Frank Zappa talked about this. It's kind of dumb. Not dumb isn't the right word. It's kind of wasted energy to do a different set list every show, because you want your show to have an artistic arc and an artistic flow. And the vast majority of people only go to one show per tour. So if you do a different set list every night, it's kind of a waste of that set list, you know? But that being so, I actually love it when bands do the same set list every night, because it means you kind of get a meaningful, thought out set list, which is like, it's sort of like an album, if you will. It's got a flow to it, you know. That
yeah.
being said, effed up did a different set list both nights, and they were totally awesome both nights. And so for a while, effed up has been kind of dispersed and kind of more serious and not quite as dark and mysterious and wacky as they were when they first were around. Well, dark is the wrong word. Mysterious and wacky when they were first around. The longtime fans will remember that when they did Chemistry of Common Life, they did a 12-hour show, and they had like all these celebrities that were going to show up, but it wasn't even real. But then some of them did show up, like Moby. They said Moby was going to show up, but he wasn't booked to show up, and he did show up, which is kind of cool, you know. Some other people, and so they did like a 12-hour concert. They've done some other wacky stuff. So this wackiness is they're going to be writing, recording, and performing brand new stuff, the stuff they haven't even written yet, for 24 hours in correlation with their new album the next day, which I already have, which is great, and which follows one day. And so I like the theme, I like the concept, and you know me, I like high concept, I like high theme. And I'm sure they're going to squeeze a 7-inch or something out of this, so that'll be really cool. And so I think it's rad and awesome and fun, Em, and I think it's a good idea. I guess the question is, Em, is effed up isn't quite on the tip of the tongue of the music press like they were 10 years ago. Is that just the nature of the thing, or did something happen? You know, because for like David comes, Kem Comp, David Comes to Life, they were huge. And now they're still around, but they're not quite as massive as they were then. Does that matter, Em? Oh, also, Em, check this out.
Yes.
I was standing in line at the merch line for Off, and Sandy was at the effed up table, and someone was talking to Sandy, and she essentially intimated that yes, there's a ton of material already recorded, and that there are Zodiacs ready to go. That's what she said to some random guy.
Ooh, that's exciting. That is exciting. They are going
So,
to
and
complete the Zodiacs.
the day well better. So anyway, Em, what's your take on all of this?
I don't know why they stopped getting coverage, or well, I mean, they haven't stopped completely getting coverage, but why like they're not kind of the media darlings anymore. That I can't answer. I don't think anything happened. I think it was probably just like a trend thing. Like people really liked different, like they really liked ChemCom, they really liked all this kind of stuff, and then they just kind of like got away from it when they started getting a little bit more like experimental with like Dose Your Dreams and different things. And I also think like the people who are writing for different publications, like their tastes change, and that's the thing we have to kind of keep in mind too, is like if you're reading I don't know, a site that's not Punk News, insert whoever you want here. Like they have a rotating cast of writers, and your listener, like they're going to be listening to different things. You're going to be paying attention to different things. Again, different things trend, different things get more clicks and more eyes. So they want to get more people who are interested in this or that or the other thing. And then same thing, like even if they're the same writers who are covering, like fucked up, maybe they've changed their direction. Maybe they've started paying attention to a different type of music, and they've stopped paying attention to this type. You know, like that happens sometimes. You know, like you have times when you're really into a certain subgenre, and times where you don't listen to it as much, and you're into something completely different. Which I think is just normal and natural. So I think that's what happened with the music press situation. I'm really glad that they're back to doing kind of like wacky shit, because it's fun. Like they're having fun with it. You know, like this doesn't feel forced. This doesn't feel like a publicity stunt. This doesn't feel like, you know, whatever. It just feels like we're gonna do this because we want to do it, and you know, like welcome fans, let's go. Kind of thing. The 12-hour show is one of my favorite things that they've ever done. Obviously I wasn't there, but like reading about it and like seeing different things afterwards, and it was just like, oh my gosh, I hope one day like I'm able to do something like that, or you know, whatever. So yeah, the more they incorporate different things, I think it's is a good sign, a good thing. And I'm excited for new Zodiacs.
Yeah, Zodiacs are probably my favorite. I mean, I love the Zodiacs. Although, like that Oberon 12-inch was awesome. Year of the Horse was awesome. The new record's real good. I don't necessarily love the college rock aspect of effed up. And the new record does kind of have a college rock aspect, but of the college rock or indie rock effed up aspect, this is definitely my favorite one. But like I said, like Oberon was amazing. Yeah, the Horse was amazing. So yeah. Let's do one last story here, Em. Flocks of Pink Indians released The Strive to Survive to Cause the Least Suffering Possible in 1982. Of course, that was produced by Penny Rimbaud under the name Shaw Rambouille, which, of course, is a mashup of Penny Rimbaud. And so anyways, some guy, thank goodness for collectors, some guy, so of course, as listeners probably know, is between each track, there's like guitar feedback. And Penny Rimbaud cut that up and kind of put that in between each track and kind of made a collage out of it, which now is extremely common in anarcho and even punk. And feedback and sound collages between tracks is like it's been done a million times. But people forget that Crass was the first band to do that, like by far, and that Penny Rimbaud applying that to other bands was kind of analogous to like Brian Eno applying his sheen to Roxy Music and Talking Heads and Devo. Or you know, Rick Rubin applying his sheen to Johnny Cash and Slayer and Beastie Boys, like a very identifiable trademark sound to a recording. So this was like breaking news. Anyway, some guy somehow got the feedback recording, which is about 4 minutes long, that Penny Rimbaud chopped up for the Flux record, and he put the entire unedited feedback loop on YouTube, so you can hear now the whole 4 minutes of feedback that was used on Strive to Survive. And did you listen to this, and what did you think of this feedback? And is this historically significant, or is this stupid?
I have not listened to the feedback. Are there, like, things in it? Like, you can hear people talking or anything, or is it just, like...
No, it's just feedback. Just feedback.
Oh, God. I think it's funny, and I think it's worth it for the bit and the bit alone. And you're getting room tone probably somewhere. You can sample it and be like, hey, we have a Flux of Pink Indians feature. And it's kind of like those noise albums that feel like an endurance contest. So... there's probably something there. And if not, at least it's funny. John, what do you make of it?
I think it's funny, and I think it's historically significant and fun. And you know,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, if you put out like a 7-inch of it, I would buy it. I would buy it. Like, oh, it's fucked. You know.
Wait, did you listen to the whole thing?
Kind of funny. I did. But honestly, like what I would do is if I was DJing, I would open with that, like just to clear the room and then like snap. You know, well, like I said,
yeah.
I'm back into DJing, and I love DJing. And all the other guys who DJ, they play like soul and jazz deep cuts. They're like, yeah, here's this obscure soul song. You know, aren't I groovy, man? I'm hip with the brothers. I'm a white guy, but I'm hip with the brothers. Here's an obscure soul song, you know? And then, like, listen, it's cool to play soul, but like when that's all, it does feel a little tokenization when that's all you play. Or maybe that's not the right word. Whatever, you know, it's if you're only playing, it's like a white guy that only plays gangster rap, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, so that like yeah. They only play soul. So, you know, I love to clear the room with feedback, and then I hit him with, you know, just a total like Hanson or something, and then I jump around to punk and whatever. So I love that kind of recording. I just call them room smashers or whatever, just to announce to the room, John G is here. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not here to fit in, I'm not here for you to think I'm groovy. I'm here to upset you, you know, so yeah.
Yes, I like
so,
it.
So yeah, so that's that. And anything else you want to mention or that we should cover, or should we wrap this on up? I will say go see Free LSD. There are some more showings. It is a great movie to see. Go see Joe Jack Talcum. He's got some solo shows coming up. The Dead Milkmen are playing Riot Fest in September. The Dead Milkmen are playing Riot Fest to 80,000 people September. Just after Joe played to 175 people at my Ringy Dink little show. So go see the Dwarves. They're on tour in the UK. Go see the Misfits. It's $39. You can probably get a ticket outside for $20.
Savings. This comes out tomorrow, right?
It's going to come out in about 10 minutes, Em.
Okay. So... If you're in Toronto or the GTA, you should go to New Friends Fest. I think it might be sold out, but they have a lot of just like killer bands this year. Last year was one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life. I loved it. I was all set to go, and then a bunch of shit happened. So I unfortunately am not able to go this year. I'm sitting it out, which really sucks. I'm pretty bummed out, but everyone should go and tell me how it is and send me pictures and videos. And go listen to the M tells you what to listen to New Friends Fest. You can hear all the bands, and they're all really cool. You know, Screamo lives. There is still hope for it. I'm trying to find the perfect album for you when we do album battle for it, because it's like, there's something that's gonna make you love it.
Well,
Or at least tolerate it.
let's do well. So next week we probably will have Brenna Red of
Oh, sick.
what's the band
Last
and
Gang.
Brenna Last Gang. If she's not on, we'll do album battle next week. But if she is on, then we'll do album battle the week after. How's that?
Works for me.
All right. Well, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. And until then, we'll see you next week. Brah.